when the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
It's time for Abandoned Manitoba, where we discover lost and abandoned places in our province with a little help from our friend Gordon Goldsborough, who joins me in the studio. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Nadia.
So the clue from last week, remind us.
I said that we would be visiting a grand mansion here in Winnipeg that had connections to meat, to grain, to newspapers, and to senators. I was referring to something called the Gordon House. It's located on Wellington Crescent, right next door to St. Mary's Academy in a rather exclusive part of the city. It was built in 1909, and the two-story brick building has had several noteworthy occupants over its 111 years of history.
111 years, wow. Why was it called Gordon House?
It's a fairly general practice to name houses after their first occupant. And in this case, the man who built the house in question was a fellow named James T. Gordon. Now, he was born in Ontario. He came to Manitoba here in the early days in 1879, and he ran a business selling lumber, cattle, and grain at Pilot Mound. He then later established a cattle firm that probably people haven't heard of these days, but it was called Gordon, Ironside, and Fairs. And it was one of the largest meatpacking firms in all of Canada. It had branches in Saskatchewan, Ontario, and Quebec. Mr. Gordon, in other words, was a pretty wealthy man. He died 4 days before Christmas in 1919, and he's buried here in Winnipeg in the Elmwood Cemetery.
Who were the later occupants of the house?
Well, his widow sold the property to a fellow named William Bolth. He was a 39-year-old grain merchant. And he's well-known in his own right, but his father, Nicholas Bolth, was literally one of the pioneers of the Western grain trade. So his son, William, lived in the Gordon House with his wife and their four kids from 1920 to 1936, about 16 years. And then after that, the next occupant was a 39-year-old newspaper man named Victor Sifton. He was actually the general manager of the Winnipeg Free Press. He was also noteworthy in another respect. His father was Clifford Sifton. And if you're at all a student of Canadian history, you recognize that name. Clifford Sifton was the federal minister of the interior, and he oversaw an aggressive immigration policy that brought thousands of settlers to Western Canada. Well, anyway, so Victor Sifton lived in the Gordon House right up until his death in April of 1961. The last resident of Gordon House was a fellow named Douglas Everett. His father, Horace, had owned an automobile dealership here in Winnipeg called Dominion Motors. And the son turned the firm into the Domo Gas chain, that, of course, of filling stations that are still operating, of course, across Western Canada. Well, in 1966, Mr. Everett was appointed to the Canadian Senate at the age of 39. And that actually made him the youngest senator in Canadian history. So there you have it. You have the beginnings, you have meat, then you have grain, then you have newspapers, and then finally you have the Senate.
Now, it seems the residents of the house were all known for their wealth and power. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. I mean, it is, of course, a very Tony area of the city. The people that live there typically are rather affluent. But my friend Christian Cassidy, who's done some research on the house, has indicated that, in fact, it had a somewhat less affluent occupant, but I think no less significant. So from 1916 to 1918, the Gordon family had a live-in chauffeur who drove them around, drove them in their car. This was a guy named William Kirk. Now, his wife, Jessie, was actually a school teacher, but she lost her job over her social activism. She was quite active in the social movement of the early 20th century. And her Jessie Kirk is noteworthy because she was the very first woman elected to the City Council of Winnipeg in 1921. Now, admittedly, after she left the Gordon House, but the first woman in municipal politics lived in the Gordon House.
How did you discover all of this? Like, how does a person research who has lived in a particular house over time?
Yeah, I get this question a lot. People want to know, like, I want to know who lived in my house before me. Well, if you happen to live in Winnipeg or in Brandon, the go-to source is the Henderson Directory. It was an annual summary published all the way from 1880 up until the year 2000. And it lists for every street address in Winnipeg and in Brandon its sort of main resident. I guess it would probably have been the sort of the breadwinner of the family. And it also lists their occupation. You can go to libraries in various places. The Millennium Library here in Winnipeg, for example, has copies of the Hendersons going right back. They have a full set of them at the Manitoba Legislative Library here in Winnipeg. And the Brandon Public Library has a complete set as well. But if you're not able to go to the library, it's also worth looking at the website of the University of Alberta, because it turns out they have scanned the Henderson directories right up to 1965 for Winnipeg, 1955 for Brandon. And so you can browse those from the leisure of your home.
Such an interesting project that we could do for ourselves, hey? Like,
absolutely.
In our own homes.
Pick your house and just basically find it in a particular year, and then you just go year by year, and you can work out, you know, when they arrived, when they left, when the new person arrived, and you can work out usually the entire history of occupancy of an address that way.
How about houses in other places outside of Winnipeg and Brandon?
It's a little bit tougher. Unfortunately, there's no Henderson directories for most of the other communities, but there is a way. So most municipal offices around the province have copies of what's called the tax roll. And basically, it's a list of the people who received a municipal tax bill. And that's usually the person who owns the property. They get a bill in the mail. Well, these rolls are produced annually. And by law, municipalities are required to keep them in perpetuity. You know, occasionally they get lost through fire or some other misadventure. Sometimes they're held at the municipal office. Sometimes they're held in archive. So, for example, here in Winnipeg, the City of Winnipeg Archive has the Winnipeg tax rolls. But they're in different places, but they are public documents. So a person can visit the municipal office or wherever the records are held, and you can, again, browse successive years and say, okay, who received the tax bill this year, who received the tax bill next year, and so on. And I've used this in a number of ways. For example, I was doing research one time on the cottage owners at Delta Beach, and so I went to the office of the rural municipality of Portage-la-Prairie, and I went through years and years of these tax rolls and was able to work out exactly who owned which cottage when, and it's really the only way you can do that sort of thing. So there are ways to do it outside of Winnipeg and Brandon, just a little, maybe a little more work.
Now, going back to Gordon House, what's its current status?
In 2016, Senator Everett sold the house to someone. I think he thought perhaps that the person he sold the house to was going to move his family in. But instead, it turned out the plan is to demolish the Gordon House and replace it with a multiple family condominium. Now, that was 3 years ago, and to date, the demolition has not taken place. The building has been, what I can tell, it looks like it's been standing vacant for a couple of years. What I'm hopeful, though, is that if the project does go ahead, that the new structure will be sympathetic to the sort of prevailing architectural style of the surrounding neighborhood. You know, it sometimes seems that when they build these sort of infill buildings in older areas, such as this one, they often build them with sort of a modern style that is jarringly sort of inconsistent with those of the nearby buildings.
Is there anything that can affect the style of these infill buildings?
Well, I'm not sure anything that will affect the Gordon House situation, but right across the river from the Gordon House is an area of the city we call Armstrong's Point, and that's significant. So back in September of 2018, the Winnipeg City Council passed what they call a Heritage Conservation District's bylaw, under which parts of the city can be designated as a heritage conservation district. And under that designation, renovations to existing buildings, the construction of new buildings in a designated heritage conservation district must comply with certain design criteria that are agreed on for the area. And in fact, Armstrong's Point is likely going to be designated as the city's first heritage conservation district. In fact, the city council is discussing the matter this coming week. So we should know fairly soon if it's going to happen. Now, of course, none of this affects the Gordon House because it's in a different part of the city. It's in the Crescentwood area. But it's possible, given the sort of the heritage of the Crescentwood area, that it would be another logical candidate for designation as a heritage conservation district. And if so, it would, in theory, affect future projects, such as the one that's being proposed for the old Gordon House.
Gordon, thank you for this.
You're welcome, Nadja.
The clue for next week, please.
An abandoned site near Lac Da Bonny that for over 18 years hosted important scientific research a quarter of a mile below ground.
We'll have to stay tuned for that. Gordon, thank you.
See you next week.
No matter where I go, every time.
on the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many moons ago.